Okay, good morning, everybody. Back in the past, the distant past, if we can imagine such a thing, I would always introduce these legal holiday shiurim by complimenting everyone here, that here we have a legal holiday, a day on which people have off, mostly. Rabbis are still working, but otherwise, you know, most other people are off. And there's a variety of different things we could be doing today. And instead, we come, you know, we choose to come to hear words of Torah and to utilize the extra time to fulfill a mitzvah. It's something very, very commendable, and yishkoyach to everybody for being here. That's what I would say in the Shanim Kadmonios, in the previous days. But this particular time, I want to add to it, it's a particular simcha to be able to be here by a legal holiday shiur, because this is the first one we've had since shortly before COVID. The last legal holiday breakfast and shiur we had was February 2020, President's Day. I actually was not here for that one, because YU has yeshiva on President's Day, so I was not here. And, you know, a few things happened in the world since February 2020. But Baruch Hashem, we're here, and Baruch Hashem, we're at a point where we're able to resume the legal holiday shiurim, the Torah that they represent, the camaraderie that they represent, and certainly our tefillah is that, first of all, everyone should be well. That's not a simple thing these days. Everyone should be well, should continue to be well, and that we should be zocha to be able to share these kinds of activities, Torah-based activities together. Our speaker today, Rabbi Yosef Cohen, is a fourth-year medical school student at the Technion and is currently doing rotations in New Jersey. He's enrolled in the Yadin Yadin Kollel at Reeds and Yeshiva University and serves as a research assistant for Rabbi Dr. J. David Bleich. Rabbi Bleich, just as an aside, very often davens here in the morning, and he gave the shul a compliment recently. He was here during the period of Slichus, and I asked him, Rabbi Bleich, you know, what brings you down Davka during the week of Slichus? He said, this is the only shul in Manhattan where I can actually daven Slichus, say the words properly, and really feel like I'm saying Slichus properly. So I saw him around Yeshiva about a month and a half ago, and I said, Rabbi Bleich, we haven't seen you in a while. He said, maybe you'll start saying Slichus again, you know, I'll come back. So Rabbi Bleich, if that's what it takes, you know, we'll, we're prepared to do that. So Baruch Hashem, we have a little bit of a connection to Rabbi Bleich here as well. The topic for today is cannabis and halacha. I think all of the jokes that could have been made have already been made, so we'll just pretend that those have been made and get them out of the way. We will not have a soundtrack of the Kaulbach Lord Get Me High playing in the background, despite how appealing it might be. But I think on a serious note, and again, we're about to hear a serious shiur about cannabis and its halachic implications. I think one of the takeaways from today, besides the actual content of the shiur, is the way that there is a Torah perspective on everything. Right? Everything in the world, no matter how mundane or outlandish it might be, the Torah HaKadosha has what to say on that topic. And although I do not believe the point of today's shiur is a how-to guide, nonetheless, the takeaway from today is that even a topic such as this, the Torah has what to say, and we're about to hear Be'ezus Hashem a very erudite shiur going through Ma'ar Makomos that will give us a sense of the Torah's attitude towards cannabis and specific halachic issues that can be analyzed with regard to cannabis. Without further ado, it's a pleasure to call upon Rabbi Cohen.
So good morning, everybody. I first want to apologize that I'm not going to be speaking about whether or not it's mutter to use marijuana or which way it's mutter to use marijuana. It's a conversation for somebody else who deals with that sort of thing. We're going to assume that cannabis is mutter and that you're allowed to use it for purposes of this shiur. So this whole shiur really started, this whole topic really started last Shemitah cycle. Last Shemitah cycle, so in Israel is the place where most medical marijuana experiments or research has been done, because they have the most flexible laws regarding medicinal marijuana. In America, it's very hard to get it, very hard to get approved. to get federal funding for it, but in Israel it was much easier. So what happened was there were, I think, four distributors of medical marijuana. One of them was a religious Jew. He was actually a Baal Tshuva. He was a religious Jew. And the rules 7 years ago were that in order to be a provider of medicinal marijuana, you had to have all this security in place to make sure that it was controlled. They had guards, there were cameras, there were fences, a whole bunch of things in order to make sure that nobody can get to the marijuana. So Shemitah comes along, and this religious Jew now has a problem. In Shemitah, you have to allow access to your field. He is not, he's prohibited, the government doesn't let him give access to the field. What is he supposed to do by Shemitah? So he apparently sent this question to a whole bunch of people who were all in contact with one another, and they ended up forming some sort of convention in Rav Zilberstein's kollel, I think. He organized, he got a whole bunch of people together, they all gave shurim, and they produced this nice little pamphlet discussing what the status of marijuana is on Shemitah. They apparently were very excited about it. They were allowed to get they wanted to see the medicinal marijuana. They couldn't just talk about it. They had to see what they were actually referring to. So they had this whole security guards and whatever else came along with the sample. It came into the room. Apparently it smelled great. They were all very excited about it. They apparently, either Zilberstein or somebody else, made a brand name of Samiman, and everyone else also made the brand. They all got very excited. So that was basically what happened 7 years ago. This Shemitah cycle, the law has changed in Israel apparently. Now it's a little bit easier to grow marijuana, so the question might be mute, but this conversation came up again, and the question was sent to Reb Bleich, and that's what we've been working on for a little while now. He's been working on it, I've been trying to assist. And so that's what we've been thinking about, marijuana and halacha, so that's what really gave the stimulus for this year. So I don't just want to talk about marijuana on Shemitah. I want to talk about it. It comes up in a couple places in Halacha and has some interesting implications, some fascinating marikumis. I wanted to sort of browse through those. I do apologize that in your marikumis sheet, I didn't really provide the primary sources, because if I did that, we'd have a lot more than just one nice piece of paper. So I give you a lot of secondary sources that are quoting the primary sources. But I'll point them out as we go along. So most of the questions regarding marijuana, so I really want to discuss probably four topics. One of them is, do you make a bracha? Two is, are you allowed to smoke marijuana or tobacco on a fast? Can you give it as mishloach manis? Are you allowed to use it on yantiv? And then lastly, sorry, five questions. Are you allowed to, for Shemitah, what are the implications regarding Hilchos Shemitah? So most of these questions, if marijuana is considered a food, then it's very easy. If it's a food, obviously I'm allowed to give it mishloach manis. Obviously there's a din of shmita on it. Obviously, what else did we say? You're allowed to eat it on yantiv. Right? All these things are quite simple. So whenever you take, so if you're taking marijuana and baking it to brownies or something like that, none of this is relevant. Answer's easy. It's food. Right? Nothing else to talk about. What's interesting is when we're discussing smoking it, then it becomes an interesting question. How do we think about smoking? Now, obviously, most of my requirements about smoking are not about marijuana. They're about smoking tobacco. So we'll have to focus on smoking tobacco and then see how it applies to marijuana. So the first marmakim we have, I think it's quoted in your source number one. It quotes the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham actually makes this a very easy sugya. And instead of considering smoking something that is, something else, he considers it food, possibly. The Magen Avraham has this idea that because people are enjoying it, and after they smoke, they feel full, they don't feel the need to eat, therefore it can be considered some sort of food item. Now, when you read the Magen Avraham, it's not exactly clear what he means, because he says you have to make a bracha on it. So what does he mean when he says you have to make a bracha on it? Is he talking about a Bernay Besamim, or is he talking about maybe, I assume, a shahakal? What else would you possibly make on smoking? It's not really clear, but at least some people seem to think he thinks that you would be making a shahakal on it. So then, if that's true, then potentially we have a marmakim, a Magen Avraham, that tells us that before you smoke marijuana, you would need to make a shahakal. There is a problem. Sorry.
Would that mean any time you smoke, or just marijuana?
So he says he's talking about smoking tobacco, and so. And what else would you want to...
No, I'm saying, so tobacco is tobacco, so it could be any cigarette.
Yeah, meaning any. So we just do the. When you say cigarette, you mean?
Like a regular cigarette, like a Marlboro Light.
Oh yeah. So he's talking about tobacco. So yeah.
So you would make a bracha according to him on any cigarette.
Possibly yes.
Okay. Are we talking about medical marijuana here, or are we just talking about enjoying people who want to enjoy do it for whatever you call it, pleasure?
So we are we're going to distinguish between those two things a little bit once we get to the Yantav part of this shir. But we will distinguish between those two. But as of now, just anytime someone's smoking marijuana, we're just going to go across the board. Maybe if it's refuah, you can make a bracha for some sort of refuah. That's a different conversation. So as far as making this bracha, so the Magen Avraham's argument is that people are full after they smoke. This is going to come up a couple of times in different Maamar Kamis, right? You smoke, you don't feel hungry anymore, people aren't necessarily going to eat, right? For anyone that knows anything about marijuana has the opposite effect. Marijuana is appetite stimulus. It makes you want to eat. You get the munchies, right? So maybe it's possible, at least, that even if the Magen Avraham is going to make this argument, he might not necessarily make it regarding marijuana, right? It doesn't have this, it doesn't make you feel full. The only problem is that the Magen Avraham also says he has two things. One is that it makes you feel full, and the other one is that the full body enjoys it, and that, like, you taste it in your cheek, something along those lines. So marijuana, you do, I assume, taste in your mouth as well when you're smoking it. And your whole body does have some sort of pleasure for, right? That's why people are smoking it. They make them feel good. So it's not clear which one he would emphasize. If he's emphasizing that it makes you feel full, then it doesn't apply to marijuana. If he's emphasizing the other point, then it would.
When you said cheeks, you mean hanos goren for a bracha. You get the pleasure in the throat.
So yes, but they use the term nechayayim, but sure. I don't know if the... I mean, I'd have to have a little bit more experience smoking marijuana to answer that.
Something to be hanah that it goes down the throat, for example, on Yom Kippur, if you just gargled something, but you haven't let it come down your throat, so it's not called a chila, because then you go down the throat for a brother.
To be completely honest, I didn't really consider the difference between those two things. I assume they're one and the same, but you're right, it's possible there is a way to distinguish between those two points. It's not just tasting it wouldn't be enough. You'd also have to somehow feel it going down your throat. I'm not sure. I assume when you smoke, you would feel that also, right? Because it goes into your lungs. I assume you feel something, but I'm not 100% sure.
I thought if something goes into your throat, there has to be something. But if it's only air that has the radiance of marijuana, it's not really a chefza. It's either a shtir or a nechila. It's not even a solid, it's not a liquid.
So I won't answer you scientifically, but I'll answer you halachically, that I have at least one marmakim that says that when you're smoking tobacco, he calls it a luchayr, or something like that. There's something from that that is going into your body. I don't know what that thing is, but whatever that is, I'll say is what you're eating. That's how I'll answer you.
Was that talking about Yom Kippur? We're not supposed to get hanah.
I don't remember where I saw it. Which who said? I think it was regarding. It was possible. It was regarding Yantiv, but I'm not 100%. Regarding a fast, actually. Sorry, it was regarding about whether or not it's an Isser. So it would also apply to Yom Kippur.
It's more of a deprivation from getting pleasure of something coming into your body, but not necessarily the positive aspect of an achil. And I'll stop now.
Yeah. So it's. You're right, there might be something to think about there, but I'm not 100% sure what, I haven't clarified that point. But you're right, there might be something to think about. Now, just to emphasize how seriously some people are taking the Magen Avraham, there's even one person that apparently, whenever he would smoke, he would first take a shahak, he would first take a cup of water, make a shahakal on that, and have in mind the smoking. Just in case, you really do have to make a birchas shahakal. So people were actually seriously thinking about this Magen Avraham. The Chida has this idea. Again, there's nothing, just pointing it out, there's nothing really to do with this, but it practically doesn't really make any difference. But his point is that if Chazal were around and Chazal had seen what tobacco was, they definitely would have made a bracha on it. Again, this is referring back to Chida's time, everybody's smoking, everybody's enjoying it. So he thinks that Chazal would have been metaking some sort of bracha of smoking, whatever that is. Right? So there is, I mean, again, just because if Chazal had done it, that doesn't really mean anything. We're not going to make up a new bracha on tobacco. But there is this some sort of idea that you would have to make some sort of bracha on it. Obviously, it's not how we pass an halacha lemaisa, and we're not actually going to make a bracha when you smoke, and definitely not even the Smagen Avram, I think, would most likely agree that by marijuana, since especially because it's making you hungry afterwards, it doesn't even fulfill what food does, so then you would... You wouldn't have to make any bracha on it. Now the question is, which then leads us to the second question, which is on a fast. As you point out, are you allowed to smoke on a fast? So all the sources that I found that I've also quoted for you, this is also primarily source number 6. I changed the order after I put the Marmar Kemis together. So on a fast, it's the Machne Chaim argues. So most Marmar Kemis seem to think that you definitely are allowed to fast on are allowed to smoke on a fast. But all of them are responding to somebody else who thought that you couldn't smoke on a fast. So there was this idea out there that you shouldn't be allowed to smoke on a fast. The Machne Chaim argues that the reason for that is because the person he's responding to is, again, the same idea as Magen Avram. Smoking makes you feel full. You're making you feel full of something that's asr to do on a fast. So that's why they thought it might be asr. The Machne Chaim argues that when tobacco makes you feel full, it's not actually making you feel full. What it's doing for you is it's providing for you this secondary feeling of satisfaction. I'm not 100% sure I know what exactly that means, but I think his point is that it's not something that can sustain you, right? You can't smoke instead of eating. You can eat, and then if you smoke, you might not, let's say you ate breakfast, you could skip lunch because instead of lunch you smoked and it helped you feel full. It's just like nowadays, you know, you recommend drinking coffee. Coffee helps you feel full, so you won't, you can hold off from eating for longer. It's one of the recommendations for people that want to fast for longer or don't want to eat as much, right? So he says the same idea on the same. So that was theoretically what they were concerned about, that it would make you feel full. But he's saying that's not an issue because on a fast, that's not something that's going to be usr on a fast. On a fast, what's usr is the actual feeling full, not something that's going to make you feel full for longer. I don't know exact terms, exact definitions for those two things, but I think it makes sense that one of them is obviously sustenance, which is asr on a fast, and a fast, we're never asring something that's just going to help you fast longer. The Darkei Noam, which is probably one of the earlier sources on this sheet, he makes the case that even though on a fast it's not going to be considered food, he still says it's asr to smoke on a fast because a fast is a day when you're supposed to be doing tshuva. Is more of a musr sort of idea. You're supposed to be doing tshuva, you're supposed to be, you know, learning Torah, things like that. You shouldn't be smoking in the corner, you know, and schmoozing or whatever it is that they were doing, right? Again, that's obviously not a real, that's not a real halachic reason why you're not allowed to fast. It's just, you know, a good musr that you shouldn't, you know, what you're supposed to be focusing on a fast. Okay. Now, the next conversation, that's about fast. The next is whether or not, how about mishloach manis? Can I send someone a bag of marijuana for mishloach manis? Now, obviously, from just, you know, thinking about it off the top of your head, your answer should be no, because mishloach manis is food. This something is not food, so what's even the question? Now, again, obviously, I'm just going to keep quoting our Magen Avram. Maybe it is considered something of food, so maybe according to this Magen Avram that we're not passing like, but maybe according to this Magen Avram, it can be something sending mishloach manis. Okay, fine. But obviously, from the top of my head, you would argue that it's not food. The Maharal of Prague has some sort of idea that he thinks that since, this is sources 3 to 5, by the way, between those Marmikimis, that since the tables are, people always set their tables with, this is about tobacco, not marijuana, but they always have the tobacco there also, they always have cigarettes available for everybody to be smoking, so maybe it can be considered something, again, he doesn't actually think this, he's just quoting this option, then maybe it can be something that people can, you know, smoke on Purim, and that will make you feel good, and maybe that's what Mishloach Manis is all about, so it'll be good enough.
Mm-hmm. That's no question that could be acceptable for the Mishloach Manis. But on a tangent here, if someone's taking medicinal marijuana, let's say for a health condition, let's assume that they're not, you know, geshko sakana, does the food have to have a hechsher, not unlike, you know, medicine you buy in the pharmacy?
So you're asking a question about whether or not, in general, what medicine needs a hechsher or not.
I guess, you know, it's like we don't, yeah, I guess that's what we're getting at. I mean, usually we don't think as brownies as medicine, but for somebody who's taking marijuana for, you know, let's assume it's not just for recreation. Let's assume it's for a legitimate health condition. Does that, you know, is that medicine in respect of something that might need a hechsher or not?
So as far as getting a hechsher or not, I'm going to avoid that part of the question. You're asking, it doesn't have to be kosher. Does it have to have kosher ingredients, right? Does it have a hechsher? It ends up being a public policy question. Also, I think the OU refuses to give a hechsher.
No, you give some. I thought at one point they said cookies that are medicinal marijuana.
Oh, I thought at one point they said they won't. You are doing it now?
No, they are.
Okay, so I'm wrong. Sorry. So then it's easier. Then I'll just go with that. So the short answer to your question is the reason why, in general, medicine doesn't need a hechsher is because it's not food, right? A pill is not necessarily food. You don't taste anything. You're just swallowing it in. We're not considering that a food item. So then there's no reason for necessarily for those items to be kosher. The problem is when we're talking about, let's say, the chewable vitamins, right, that have flavor, then that should potentially need a hechsher because you actually taste something that could be considered some sort of food item. So if those vitamins should theoretically need a hechsher, then I would argue obviously the same thing by the brownies, right? The brownies should also need a hechsher. That's food. There's no reason why I think that should not need a hechsher. And apparently the OU does us the favor of actually giving the hechsher.
There are a few of the cookies and brownies that are meant for medicinal purposes that have an OU.
Yeah. So perfect. So even better, you even have someone that actually gives you the hechsher for you. You don't have to try to figure out for yourself whether or not this thing is kosher. So what ends up being interesting, we're going to get talked about Yontif in a minute. But in general, by Yontif, the question is whether or not it's something a shabbat l'kol nefesh, right? Basically, on Yontif, if something is considered food, right? Then you're definitely allowed to do malachas with that thing, right? So I'm allowed to cook eggs without a problem, right? But there's a question in general. Let's say, can I take a shower on Yontif? The part of the question, at least, can I take a shower on Yontif? Is taking a shower davar shabbat l'kol nefesh, right? Because what I'm doing is I'm heating up water. Right, so I'm not heating up water for food. I'm heating up water in order to clean myself. So for things like that, that's something that's hana. Those things are only mutter if it's davar hashava l'kol nefesh. Everybody does it. Right, so that's part of the question of showering, which potentially why maybe the question changes a little bit depending on which time period or potentially where you are currently located. How often people are showering? If people are showering every day, every other day, you know, once a month, these things could change. So what would be interesting is if you argue that marijuana is asr on Yontif because it's not davar shabbat l'kol nefesh, then you might shouldn't then it's not something that people are eating or considering food, so then you shouldn't be yotze on it for mishloach manes either because it's also not something that's considered food. This is the Tirash v'Yatzer somehow makes this argument. He argues that's not true. Just because it's asr on Yontif, that doesn't mean that you can't be yotze mishloach manes on it. It's a little bit weird that he's applying that same principle for both, but that seems to at least be his idea. The Tzitz Eliezer says, this is very similar to the Machane Chaim that we quoted before about tobacco on smoking on a tinus. He quotes the Shelis Yaakov, right, that even according to the Magen Avram, that tobacco fills people up, it doesn't actually mean that it fills people up, it just means that it's preventing you from being hungry. Now, I don't know if preventing, the Shelis Yaakov apparently asked a doctor who told him that that's what it does. It's not filling you up, it just keeps you feeling full. Or something like that. Now, that's either exactly the same exact thing as the Machane Chaim says, or something a little bit different. Are they arguing, is the Machane Chaim also making that same case that it's just making you not feel hungry, or is he saying that there's something called filling yourself up and something called the secondary filling yourself up? I don't know. But regardless, the Tzitz Eliezer says, based off that, it won't be Mishloach Manes. Something that's Mishloach Manes has to be an actual food item. Something that just prevents you from feeling hungry is not going to be considered an actual food item, and then it would definitely not be Yetz Mishloach Manes. I just want to point out again, all these arguments would only work with cigarettes. With marijuana, it wouldn't really work because marijuana makes you hungry. So you're not really, even according to this Magen Avraham idea, you're not really accomplishing anything. So far we have that we have only one Magen Avraham that tells us you potentially have to make a bracha shehakol on smoking. It's unclear if that would apply to marijuana or not. But we could all agree that you can't smoke on a fast and that you shouldn't and you can't use it for mishloach manis. Now I want to talk in general. Now this is more of the bigger topic, the bigger sugya over here, which is davar shabbat l'kol nefesh, right? So The Darkei Noam, I just spoke this out, but this is actually in the Darkei Noam, which is, I forgot which source number that was. No, source number 7, he's the one who presents it very nicely and makes it very clear. Right, the difference between Eichel Nefesh and Dabar Anah, right, is that anything that any food item, even if it's a food item that nobody eats, right, Bach's example apparently is spinach. Spinach is something that you only force your kids to eat, but you yourself would never eat it, apparently. Right, so is that something that's considered Eichel Nefesh? Right, I agree. But apparently, this is something that other people don't like. So, if it's something that only some people eat, does it now lose its status of Eichel Nefesh? Right, because we just said that it has to be davar hashavah l'kol nefesh. This is not something that's shavah l'kol nefesh, right? Most of us won't like spinach and we don't want to eat it. So he says, the Dakidav says, there's two categories. Once something becomes ochel, once it's a food, food is mutter across the board. It doesn't matter if only one person eats it. Once it's a food item, it's something that you're allowed to cook on yantiv. Something that's not food, something that is hana, for example, the showering, or potentially in our case, smoking, that's something that it has to be something that is enjoyed by everybody. If not everyone is enjoying it, it's not davar hashavah l'kol nefesh, then you're not allowed to do it on yontif. Which then really leads to the next question, which is, who is everyone? What does everyone mean? Right? We have to define terms, because these things can change depending on where we are, what time period, who's involved, who's our population, right? You can't apply statistics without knowing who your population group is, right? So the Darkei Noam has an interesting lashon, right? His argument is that most people smoke, only some people don't smoke, and therefore we could say ruba dekula. Now, right? It's an interesting formulation. If most people smoke, then I don't need that only a miyuti miyuta, I think he says, don't smoke, right? Because if we're applying the principle of ruba dekula, right? Ruba dekula. So we have, if all we need is most people. All I need is 51%. As long as I have 51% of people smoke, 49% of people don't smoke, that's good enough for me to say everyone. But he's also including this miyuta miyuta. So it's weird. It sounds like it's more than 51%. Maybe I need, I'm totally making up numbers, 75%, maybe 95%. Who knows? This is very relevant because apparently, according to the latest statistics that I found, at least, in the CDC website, 46% of Americans between the age of 12 and something have smoked marijuana in the past. That's before it was legalized. Now it's legalized, you can argue that, you would assume that number would go up, right? So assuming that number goes up, if all I need is 51%, I'm good. All I need, I have enough people. It's davar hashavah l'kol nefesh. If I want to smoke marijuana and yantiv, it's mutter.
You can make a nafkamina if it was done once, twice, or it's a habitual.
I want to make that nafkamina as well. So that's, I don't have a marmukim for that nafkamina, but I would logically, that sounds right, right? Because it's 46% of people have smoked at one point in their life.
You just tried it once. They're not.
46% tried spinach, went off and went by the
life. Right. So the question is, what? How do we define that? Now, I actually.
How many people smoke cigarettes?
What?
How many people smoke cigarettes?
Now we're only at like 13%. It's newest statistics is I think 13% or something like that. Yeah, I looked it up. Maybe it was. I don't think we were in the 20s. I think we were in the teens. What do you mean? Right now or in the beginning of this year?
No, right now.
No, I meant that 46% of people smoke marijuana.
I think you meant one of the Maramacomos talking about smoking.
Oh, yeah, or that. That's what I thought he meant. I wasn't sure. Yeah, when you're talking about the Maramacomos, right, they're discussing people that are smoking, 100 years ago, everyone's smoking. Right, so then it changes. I agree, 100%. That is part of our question of who is everyone. This is going to be part of our problem, right? So one source is, I don't know how much of a rav I need. That's the Darkei Noam. It's unclear what he means. Do I just need 51% or do I need a much higher number? If I need a much higher number, what is that number? Unclear. That's one problem. The other problem is that there is a machlekes, we'll get to it soon. What exactly is smoking if it becomes medicine? Once it becomes medicine, it's a davar hashavah l'kol nefesh, And the question in this machlekes is between the Karban Nisanel, the Magen Avram, the Chai Adam. The basic question is, they're going back and forth about, it's unclear whether or not they're considering smoking something that everyone's doing, and it's whether or not they're calling it Davar HaShavah Kol Nefesh. And the Bir Halacha explains, what are they actually arguing about? They aren't actually arguing about anything. It's a Matthias question. It depends on where they lived. Some people lived in a place where everybody was smoking, and some people lived in a place where not everybody was smoking. So depending on where they were, that ended up being a conversation about whether or not Davar HaShavah Kol Nefesh. That means according to the Bir Halacha, that means that smoking is dependent on locale, which means if, let's say, I'm on a college campus and I'm in a frat house, right, there's probably a very good chance that I have a very high number of people smoking marijuana in that particular area. So if I define population as this particular house or maybe this particular area, then I have a very high number of people smoking marijuana, even according to possibly my Darkei Noam's, I need a very high percentage of people smoking marijuana in order to say it's Davar HaShavah Kol Nefesh, I'll have that in this location. Yeah, sorry.
So this, the Rav is discussing, is this just plain recreational use? Or if somebody is, you know, uses it ill, is that a separate question?
So we're going to make that distinction in, again, just a few minutes. But right now, just across the board, recreational use. You just want to smoke marijuana because you want to.
The type of question, is the Rav like including vaping in the same category as...
So I specifically didn't mention vaping because I think vaping, you also might end up with some electricity problems, right?
Yeah, could be.
Right? It's battery powered. So there, because I don't know which part's battery powered, what the battery's actually doing. I would assume that you can't leave it on before Yantav and then use it. And then when you're using it, you're not utilized. I assume there's something electrical happening as you're smoking in, right? I have to find out a little bit more about how vaping works. I need to be more informed on the proper drug uses for everything here. But I think for vaping, it does have... You end up running into other issues as well. So vaping makes it more complicated, so we'll avoid vaping. Anything that's going to make this more complicated than it needs to be, we're just going to avoid. And we'll deal with it a different time. That's the question. We have to define population. Now, I have at least a prima gadim. He's misupik about what it means to say Dabar Shabbat called Nefesh. But he seems to be at least leaning in the direction that it's worldwide. It's not just a particular location. If it's worldwide, then again, even my 46% statistic that I give you isn't either good, because that's only Americans over the age of 12, between whatever his age it was, so that's not either good enough. So that wouldn't either let us be able to say that marijuana is something another called nefesh and something that we can use on yantiv. The other point is what you said, right? Is what does it mean people have smoked? Does it mean that they have at one point in their life? Does it mean that they're currently smoking? Again, these are all right. These are all part of the questions we have to try to figure out. We don't have any clear ma'amikemis of what exactly that means. Right, but I think we can at least for now, according to all positions, we don't have enough people smoking to say it's Davar HaShavah Kol Nefesh, which then brings us to medicine, which is what you're throwing out from back there, is how do we consider medicine on Yantiv? So the Bnei Yeshua makes an argument based on Taisis that this is, I think most of these Ma'amikamis are all quoted in source number 8, which is the Nesivos Halacha, right? Yeah, the Nesivos Halacha is through a Vleich Sefer, so that was in, he wrote a topic on whether or not you're allowed to smoke on Yantiv, which again, a lot of those same Ma'amikamis are going to apply here. So he quotes most of the Sugya. So the Bnei Yeshua argues based on Taisis that anything that's being used for medicinal purposes is Davar HaShavah L'Kol Nefesh. Okay? Now it's unclear what exactly this Bnei Yeshua means. Now, it sounds like the argument is, and definitely the Ksav Sefer seems to think that that's what Bnei Yeshua is saying, that what's happening is Davar HaShavah L'Kol Nefesh is something that everyone needs. Now, that doesn't necessarily, this is going back to the other point before, that doesn't necessarily mean that we all need it at this time. It means something that we all potentially could need, right? So we all could potentially get sick. We will all potentially need some sort of medicine. So that means that you're going to have to give, that all medicine has this status of Davar HaShavah L'Kol Nefesh. And then anything that can be used for medicinal purposes is included in this category of Davar HaShavah L'Kol Nefesh, and you can use it on Yantiv. So that's at least the way the Ksav Sefer reads the Pnei Yeshua. Rav Leich has an interesting way of reading the Pnei Yeshua, and he seems to think that it's not the argument that any medicine is Davar HaShavah L'Kol Nefesh, but it's very limited. It's any medicine that is something that everybody will need is davar hashava l'kol nefesh. In other words, basically what falls into that category is nowadays probably something like Tylenol, right? Everyone at one point or the other is going to take Tylenol. That's something hashava l'kol nefesh across the board. That's something that's a lot of yantiv. But no other medicine is. His point to prove that, the Pnei Yeshua, right, and a lot of these achrayim, whenever they talk about smoking tobacco, they list all of the therapeutic benefits of smoking tobacco. Tobacco is great, right? It helps you, it helps people lose weight. It also helps some people gain weight, so whatever. Let's not focus on that. It helped people lose weight. It helped people with bowel problems. It helped calm people down. So then it has all these great medicinal purposes. Anyone had some sort of refuah issue, they would smoke. It was to the point where there's at least one marmakim that says, if you're going to be machmer and not smoke on yontiv, make sure to do a bli neder. Because at one point something's going to happen that you're going to need to smoke in order to make yourself feel better. This is something that everybody did. So Pnei Yeshua is incredibly limited, according to at least Reb's interpretation of Pnei Yeshua. And it's only all medicine that everyone uses, that's something that's Shavu L'Kol Nefesh.
Wouldn't that Shavu L'Kol Nefesh be in every single group in of that kind? For example, people with high cholesterol take Lipitor. So it's only people, which is a very small part of society, but within that small size society, it's Shavu L'Kol Nefesh, similar to a Tylenol. Not everyone takes Tylenol. Everyone with a headache takes a Tylenol. But you first have to have the headache. So again, each grouping is limited to Shavu L'Kol Nefesh. If with you reach that madriga of that interpretation, everyone within, or right people within that thing, are going to take this medicinal refuah.
So
but
I think
how can we stretch that beyond the scope of just those people sick, saying like by Tylenol? It's only the people who will need a Tylenol. Thus, it can be limited to only people who need Lipitor, or blood pressure medication, or anti-anxiety, or whatever it is, and that is Shavu L'Kol Nefesh within that group.
So you're pointing to one of, the more interesting parts of the sugya, which is what we were talking about before, is how do we define populations? Right, that's basically the question. How are we defining who is our population of interest? This is the classic statistician. Every time he's trying to figure out how to interpret data, this is his problem. He has to figure out what is the population that he's discussing. Right. So I think the big difference between your two things of Lipitor versus Tylenol is Lipitor is something that's given to everybody that has high cholesterol. Right. But not everyone's going to have high cholesterol. Not everybody suffers from high cholesterol. But everyone at one point in their life will be taking Tylenol.
We don't know that. That's an assumption.
I'll redefine population.
Life without taking a painkiller, they absorb the pain. They absorb the headache. They want to take a painkiller.
So
the whole world's living on Tylenol.
So I'll change to the Darkin Noam's Rive, and I have a super Rive. I'm paraphrasing. I'm making up a term. I have this really great Rive that 98% of people are going to use Tylenol, right? So you're right. I don't have 51%. I agree with you. I have more than 51%, right? You'll agree with me on that.
The point was that it's defined within a group of people who need it.
But
no infant's going to take it, for example. No, this, it's defined. You have a headache, you have a muscle ache, you have this. You're taking it. Similar to a blood pressure, similar to a cholesterol. People who are defined with a certain pain, no matter how small or large that particular grouping is going to take this particular remedy.
So I think,
I don't think it's fair to say that Tylenol is different than a blood pressure medication or anti-anxiety medicine, except the focus group. Your grouping is that much bigger.
So again, I would just change it to, first of all, I wouldn't focus on people that have a headache. I would just change your wording to, do people have to take this at one point in their life? Right? Remember, that was also part of our problem, right? We have 46% of people have at one point smoked marijuana. Is that enough to be considered to be included as part of our rave? Probably not. But if, let's say, 46% of people have smoked marijuana at least 50 times in their lives, maybe that's good enough, right? So then I would potentially make the same argument by Tylenol. You're right. If I'm only going to look at people that currently have a headache, I don't have that that high of a number relative to the general population. But if I'm looking at all people that will need to take Tylenol potentially in the next year, I am completely making up a category that next year is good enough to be included in this rave, right? So then I'll make the case that 98% of people are going to be using a Tylenol over the course of the next year. I didn't pick aspirin on purpose because some people can't take aspirin, right? So we'll go with Tylenol. I think more people did that. I don't think I've convinced you at all, but hopefully everybody else agrees with me. All right. Right, so that's the Pnei Yeshua. Now, I also want to emphasize this whole discussion within the Pnei Yeshua is only the Pnei Yeshua according to Tosfos. This is actually a Machlokes Rishonim. The Ramban, I think it's also the Rabbi, doesn't agree with the Tosfos at all. They don't think that medicine has a status of Darba Shalakol Nefesh. Medicine is its own category, right? So if you're in a situation of Pikuach Nefesh, then obviously you're taking medicine because you're always allowed to take medicine. And if you're in any other situation, then you're not necessarily allowed to take the medicine, right? It all depends on the old-time conversations about who's allowed to take medicine on Yantiv. Fine. Okay. Now, but the other thing we also have to figure out here is what is a refuah? That's also something that has to be defined, right? Because all the achrayim that are discussing smoking tobacco, right, talk about all the great health benefits that tobacco offers, right? Gives all this great stuff. So what does that mean? Nowadays, obviously, those effects are still applicable, right? We still can use those. Not only that, I could tell you from medically speaking that smoking has at least one therapeutic value, is people with ulcerative colitis, right? Smoking seems to control it. If you have Crohn's, it makes it worse, but if you have ulcerative colitis, it makes it better. Who knows why, right? But that no one's going to prescribe smoking for ulcerative colitis, because it's great that you cured the, or at least helped control the ulcerative colitis, but you also killed the guy of lung cancer, right? It's sort of like, you know, the person who survived surgery, but the patient died, right? It's not very, right? So you didn't really accomplish anything. That's one, is that considered refuah? The Pnei Yeshua, would that be considered refuah? Is he including that in his category? It's unclear. Also, once you're addicted to smoking, and this is going to be more applicable to marijuana as well, right? Once I'm actually addicted to it, smoking's great. Without smoking, I have a headache. I suffer withdrawal symptoms, whatever they are, right? I suffer from that. So smoking cures my current illness. It is currently a refuah. It's currently helping me, right? And the same could potentially be said for recreational marijuana, right? If I become addicted to marijuana, then I have marijuana dependency use, right? Then disorder, then smoking it is considered refuah. But it's not something that, you know, when I open up a pharmacology textbook about things that are refuahs, it's not something on the list. So how do I define refuah? Do I define refuah based on what a physician prescribes? Does that make something a refuah or not? I don't have a great answer to this question. I'm just pointing out this is part of what has to be defined. I pointed this out to Reb Lechi. He totally didn't agree with me. He thought that something that's medicine is something that a doctor would prescribe as medicine. If you give someone, if you let someone smoke in order to treat his ulcerative colitis, but you kill them with lung cancer in the process, that's not medicine. I don't know why. I still think that you could potentially call it that's medicine, because if I'm very narrow-minded, then I'm focusing only on one thing, and I help treat that one thing. That could still be a refuah.
One who receives it says, I'm taking this for my health. That goes into the category of medicine. So I think you're more right than Rabbi Blight. He's not here to defend himself. He says, I'm taking this for my health. That's medicine.
This is the best part of giving a share. I could say whatever I want and nobody could argue with me.
But that may not be true, because some people are having whole wheat for their health, you know. But if they say a certain language that it indicates an aspect of medicine, like a synonym to adjacent to medicine, then that would be medicine. You may want to mention that to you.
No, I mean, it's not unreasonable to say, I mean, if someone is suffering from ulcerative colitis, you know, it's not unreasonable for him or her to say, okay, listen, I'll smoke and I'll deal with the possible effects of lung cancer later. It's not something that's imminent that's going to, I mean, maybe in the long term it's not a great, you know, method of treating it, but it could be at the moment that it's very effective for the individual.
So it's unfair that he's not here, the Reb Leich is not here to defend himself, because I think that everyone's agreeing with me, right?
You know, we're not talking about what's the long-term best prescribed choice. I mean, some things in the short term are not good.
Right, true. But yeah, so I agree. So if it has, that's my point. If it has an immediate therapeutic value, then maybe I can argue that that's medicine, and the Pnei Yeshua would include it in his category.
This fellow smoking the marijuana, where is he getting it? Is he getting it on the corner, or is he getting it at a pharmacy that sells medical marijuana?
Oh, so we were avoiding all those issues by saying we're just assuming that you have legally provided marijuana either recreationally or at a pharmacy. I don't really care how you got it for purposes of this conversation. Why? You don't...
To talk of legal marijuana,
right?
That's what it
is. No, so I'm saying that the same question would apply to legal marijuana, though, right?
Well, I don't know that there exists such an entity then that you
smoke and will get, you know, and get hooked on it for non-medical reasons. Or maybe.
Why not? I don't understand. I don't understand why not.
Well, for the most part, it's probably a small portion of people. Because that's what medical cannabis is. It's stuff that you don't get addicted to.
I don't think that's true. Why is that true?
Before you take the money, it's a
doctor. You don't get addicted to for non-therapeutic purposes.
If you get addicted to me, good.
I mean, it may help you, it may continue to help you, but I don't know that you get addicted to
it. Is recreational cannabis addictive?
So it's not, as far as I know, I didn't study this extensively, but as far as I know, it's not like nicotine, which nicotine.
We're not dealing with people who go and smoke recreational, you know, go out and get their recreational cannabis. I don't know those people.
But now recreational cannabis is legalized. Recreational cannabis is legalized, right, in many states.
I know where you can buy medicinal cannabis, but I don't know where you can buy recreational.
So then, I think it's the same substance. As far as I know, it's the same, no? I think so.
I think it's the amount of THC.
I know there's some type where you take out the... There is different variations, but whatever, we'll focus on this part. Yeah. All right, so... So anyway, get it.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you, is what doctor's going to prescribe marijuana for ulcerous colitis? There is no, so it can't be given a medicine. You don't have a script for...
Oh, it's tobacco for ulcerous colitis.
I meant for tobacco.
So, I mean, no one's going to, that's the point, right? No one's going to do that because, again,
you can't be considered a medicine.
So that's... That's the counter argument, right?
But I'm just giving Dr. Robbie Blake.
I agree. I agree. I understand where he's coming from, right? Obviously, his point is that nobody in their right mind is going to prescribe tobacco to treat ulcerative colitis.
You may use it as an aside, as some type of a remedy, but no one's going to write a script and say.
I completely agree with you.
They give you these sprays or something that you insufflate, and you can get the same effect. But it's not smoking a cigarette.
Correct.
We're talking about which one are you referring
cannabis,
to?
You know, there's medicinal cannabis where you you insufflate it or you spray it.
I can tell you, most of my experiences in Israeli hospitals, I can tell you in Israel, everyone's smoking cannabis for everything. Whatever you could possibly think of, they're smoking cannabis stuff. There's one person who has whose research specializes in giving cannabis to patients suffering with Crohn's. Yeah, I mean, I don't think she's proven that it has any therapeutic value, but the one thing she's proven is that there's 100% compliance. But seriously, what she proved. Whatever. It feels good. Who doesn't want to smoke cannabis, especially if it's legalized, the doctor ordered? So there you go, you see? So... Right, so there we go. We have all those other options as well. Okay, so there you go. It's not unusual. The Mishnah Yosef points out, this is sort of my point. I didn't really make it up. I'm just jumping off the Mishnah Yosef's point, which is, this is, I think, all quoted in Source 10, that his problem is that the Pnei Yeshua says smoking is so beneficial, right? Everybody nowadays is telling us smoking is not beneficial. So, right, they're saying the Moadim Izbanim has the classic Nishtana Hateva sort of thing. Maybe they thought maybe it was somehow helpful back then, but now it isn't. Whatever. Obviously, we know that maybe they just died younger, so smoking didn't have a chance to kill them. Whatever, it happened. It just, whatever the difference is, the Mishnah Yosef says, does make this distinction, that anyone that tells me that smoking is usher because it's harmful, they're talking about the long-term use, the chronic users. But the short-term users, the person that's just smoking it once or twice, maybe that's not such a big deal.
Can affect one cell and transform. It just, the negativity of the smoke can have an effect upon the person.
Yeah, so again, I'm not...
secondary smoke and tertiary smoke, just even the smoking itself can... To transform a cell who's a study.
Yes, I'm not questioning his. I'm not using him to give medical advice. Just as a concept of they're making a difference between short term and chronic users, and maybe that sort of maybe the difference would be.
So when I was taking biology, Kendall used to come in, and she. show us what a lung looks like, secondhand smoke versus someone that smokes. So it doesn't matter.
Black lungs matter.
So
yeah, but secondhand is that's probably after a chronic user, though. Right, so that's probably, again, all chronic users or chronic experience. There you go. But again, that's all chronic, not short-term. Short-term, I don't know you. I don't think you would necessarily have that effect.
So he didn't distinguish between...
Right, so...
He didn't say how long the person was smoking. This was secondhand smoke, too, so you weren't smoking either.
Yeah, but still, that's chronic exposure to secondhand smoke.
So if someone's smoking, that means that you're getting it nonetheless, even if it's one time, two times, or three times. If everyone does it one time, you're still exposed to it.
Yeah, but as long as you're not exposed to it, then you're fine. Meaning, just smoke once and then live in a bubble and never be exposed to it again. You probably won't die from lung cancer.
We don't live in bubbles.
I agree.
Yes, I remember seeing an advertisement, I think in the old Natural Geographic, you'll find them. It says, 7 out of 10 doctors recommend their Chesterfields for their patients. Seven out of ten doctors recommend Chesterfield for their patients.
So the other thing I would point out also, since we're anyway talking about Yantiv, there's a difference between first day of Yantiv and second day of Yantiv. The only thing that's a cooler for second day of Yantiv versus first day is that things that are you being mitzdar for are allowed to be done on the second day. Which means if someone is addicted to smoking, even if we're not saying Stavra Shalko Nefesh, you're not allowed to smoke on Yantiv, but second day of Yantiv, he has a headache, he's suffering withdrawal symptoms, then you should be allowed to smoke on the second day of Yantiv. That's just to point out for there. As far as how this applies to Shemitah, which we're not really, we'll I guess discuss very quickly, there's a Gemara that talks about the difference, Rabbi Yossi says that the only things that are chayv for Shemitah are something that's Davar Shabbat L'Kol Nefesh, which is why this whole conversation about Yantiv was so important in order to move on to our next step. So the question is, do we pass in just like Rabbi Yossi? The Rabbanan disagree, right? So the Chazanish, this is Machlokes Chazanish and Rosh Hashanah Zalman. The Chazanish thinks we can't pass in just like Rabbi Yossi. Rosh Hashanah Zalman says you need both Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan's position. So according to Rosh Hashanah Zalman, this conversation is completely irrelevant. Shemitah would definitely apply to marijuana. According to the Chazanish, that according to Rabbi Yossi, it has to be that we pass in like Rabbi Yossi, it has to be Davar Shabbat L'Kol Nefesh. So then, if it's something that's not Shabbat L'Kol Nefesh, as this is again our population statistics question. So then we'd have the same thing about Yantiv, whether or not you smoke marijuana on Yantiv would also apply to whether or not marijuana would apply to Shemitah. There's a couple of other considerations as well that are a little bit more complicated, but just very briefly, the Rabbanan's argument on Rabbi Yossi is that it has to be something that that the way you use it is the way it gets destroyed, meaning like the way I eat, when I'm eating an apple, right, the destruction of the apple, me chewing it, that's something that's chayv in Shemitah. This is unclear exactly what that means. There's a machlekes, it's unclear what the machlekes is, and there's a machlekes on how unclear that machlekes is, but with marijuana, it might not apply at all, even according to the Rabbanan, which means even according to Shlomo Zalman, who says you have to also have the Rabbanan's criteria, it could be that there wouldn't be a chiyuv Shemitah by marijuana. And that is that because by smoking marijuana, the way you consume the marijuana, the way you're destroying it, is by lighting the match, right? You're lighting the fire, that's the smoke is going up. The way I enjoy it is not when I'm lighting the fire, it's when the smoke goes into my lungs and then it gets absorbed into my body. That's the part that I'm actually enjoying. That's my hana. So it could be that even according to the second option in the Gemara, according to Rosh Hashanah, who says we have to pass on the second option in the Gemara, it could be even according to that, there wouldn't be a chiyuv of marijuana and Shemitah. In which case, there is no marijuana iser on Shemitah. You can protect it, you can sell it, you could do whatever you want, and you wouldn't have an issue. Thank you very much for listening. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you,
the bracha was Boring name of Sonin or Shakol, was that decided? And I was wondering if someone gets a nutrition from intravenous, would he make a bracha on that, and that it gives him sustenance?
So first of all, within the Magen Avraham, which is what we were discussing, there was a question about what he meant exactly by saying a bracha. Did he mean Berim Nebisami, or did he mean Shehakel? The interesting part that we were considering was making a Shehakel. We don't pass like the Magen Avraham, so I don't think anyone really says that you have to make a Shehakel, other than the some people, you know, that would drink a cup of water in order to make a Shehakel on that, just in case. Okay. Now, whether or not you have to make a besamim on marijuana is also a complicated question. With a bracha besamim, does it apply only to certain things, or can it be more broadly applied to also other things that smell good? The convention that I mentioned in the beginning of this shir, right? Apparently they paskin, so Rav Zilberstein at least paskin, that when you smell marijuana, it smells good. So you do make a b'samim on it, pointing out that would not apply to tobacco. Tobacco, even though smoking tobacco, apparently some people like the smell, they don't like the smell of tobacco. They add other things into that that makes it smell good. The tobacco itself smells terrible, right? So that wouldn't apply there. And as far as IV lines, so that's not it's something that's not being then through, I guess, the GI tract or something like that. That wouldn't, I don't think anyone makes the case that you'd have to make a bracha on that, even though it provides sustenance. There is a bracha for medical therapy, but that's, you know, something else entirely. That's nothing to do with this sugya.
And to load up before tinnitus, to avoid dehydration, there's an industry for that. Is that something to negate tinnitus?
So I don't like speaking about, I don't know how to speak about things that are connected to the spirit of the day. I don't know what that means. You have to ask somebody else. I'm not, I don't know. As far as halachically, is there a problem? I don't know. What's the issue?
I mean, if someone wants to take an IV on a fast day to provide, I mean, it's not going down the regular derech achila, but I don't know.
So I've changed your question for you, if you don't mind. Ramesh has a tshuva about someone who wants to put on an IV by Yom Kippur. He can't fast. He can't fast. So he figures, what will I do? I'll get myself hooked up to an IV, and that will give me the sustenance I need. And therefore, I don't have to actually eat anything, right? IV is obviously not asrana tainis, and therefore, I can fast, and I won't have to eat on Yom Kippur or whatever the day was. Amish says, definitely, you should, I think he says it's not allowed, even. He goes that far, because it's not something that's a refuah, meaning the only things that I'm allowed to partake in are something that's, you know, medically recognized treatment. That's not a medically recognized treatment for fasting. The medically recognized treatment for fasting is to, if you can't fast, is to eat. You shouldn't put in an IV line for that, right? So that's not, so that's not, that wouldn't, that isn't usher to do on a fast, but it would also not something we would tell you to do on a fast. I think that's the answer to the question. Yeah?
I want to thank Rabbi Cohen for the livening presentation. We will bench in 60 seconds, 59, 58. How many people watched?
I knew.